From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With just weeks to go before the midterm elections, the nation is poised for a change in the political landscape. One group of people whose fate hangs strongly in the balance is immigrants, the favored target of Donald Trump, his party, and his base. But Americans of immigrant origin are taking matters into their own hands and are running for local and statewide office. Now, a new book surveys the inspiring stories of many immigrant Americans using the democratic tools available at their disposal to make their voices heard. My guest is Sayu Bhojwani, founder and president of New American Leaders, which is the only national organization focused on preparing immigrant leaders to run for public office. She served as New York City's first Commissioner of Immigrant Affairs, and she joins me to discuss her new book. It's called People Like Us, The New Wave of Candidates Knocking at Democracy's Door. Welcome to the program, Sayu.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali, and for that great introduction.
Thanks for joining us. So I want to, of course, get very specifically to the types of people that you interview for your book and feature and profile. But let's talk some generals first. I mentioned, of course, that immigration is such a huge issue. Immigrants are really such a big target in the Trump era. And there is, you know, as we're approaching the election, a very, very strong difference between, say, Republicans and Democrats, with Republicans and Trump in particular, making this midterm election about how Democrats just want open borders and sanctuary cities everywhere, and the Democrats, some of them calling to abolish ICE, and others not quite sure how to articulate support for immigrants. What do you make of how the issue of immigration is featuring in our news these days?
Well, look, let's be honest. I mean, it's a political football all the time, right? And sure, right now, the Trump administration and Republicans in general have been particularly vicious in their policy and practice. But the reality is that part of the reason that we're in this situation is that both Democrats and Republicans have failed to address the issue of immigration reform, which is not going away. Over 11 million Americans who are undocumented, who have no solid pathway to citizenship. That actually has been a challenge for quite some time. And in fact, when I started the organization I run, New American Leaders, back in 2010, it was in part in response to the failure of our national leaders to pass immigration reform and to the increasing number of anti-immigrant bills that were coming through state houses. And I thought we need to have our own voices helping to determine what the policy is. So what I make of it is that in the next few weeks leading up to the midterms is that we're going to see Democrats really avoiding any kind of significant stance on the issue, and Republicans continuing to drum up their dog whistle stories to try to get people to think about immigrants as being a source of a problem rather than the kind of contributors to American economy and democracy that we are.
There was an interesting piece in the New York Times magazine about immigration entitled "The Democrats Have an Immigration Problem. They have to figure out what they stand for." I mean, why do you think some politicians are averse to defending immigrants when we are, if you don't count, of course, Native Americans and the descendants of enslaved Africans, the rest of us are all immigrants. We are essentially, and to an extent, a nation of immigrants. It shouldn't be so difficult to defend immigration. The Dreamers in particular, who are among the most sympathetic of the subgroup of immigrants, didn't used to be, you know, difficult to defend. It used to be very easy to defend Dreamers no matter where you stood on the aisle. Not anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there is a kind of tendency to play moderate on the part of Democrats. And they've really, you know, I want to emphasize that I think there are a couple of issues that are at play here. One is that people of color, immigrants, African Americans often get taken for granted. The assumption by Democrats is that we're always going to show up and support Democrats. And the reality is that not all Democrats are the same. And so you talked about abolish ICE. You know, the complexity of what it takes to abolish ICE is a conversation that we need to have. But the underlying principle that a deportation machine and a government system that is created and maintained to dehumanize people is highly problematic. And why no Democratic candidate, or why not every Democratic candidate, saying that we cannot dehumanize people who live in our country, or people anywhere really, but people who are living in this country should not be dehumanized by our government. And that seems to me like a very basic premise that everyone should be able to get behind, and certainly Democrats. And then the last point I want to make on this is that there is an assumption by people on both sides of the aisle that demographics is destiny, and that as we have more immigrants, we are going to see more immigrants taking positions of power, owning businesses, and taking government over, if you will. And the reality is that is just not the case. The demographics are not always destiny. Our system is not designed to work for women and people of color. And so this idea that there's an inevitable takeover that's going to happen is really just not true. And I think neither Democrats or Republicans are willing to engage on this issue at a very, very fundamental and core level that problematizes the myths that we bring to the table. And by the way, Democrats are also guilty of saying that people like me, for example, can only run in districts that have voters of color, and underplaying the possibility that people like us have to run and win in any district in America. And that's a problem that, you know, Democrats are as guilty of as anyone else.
Right. We are expected, people of color are expected to be able to set aside race when it comes to voting for white candidates. But it seems to, we're told it doesn't work the other way around. But some people, of course, do prove that wrong. Let's talk about your book, People Like Us, The New Wave of Candidates Knocking at Democracy's Door. First of all, what sort of candidates did you survey in your book? You know, some might say, well, if you're an immigrant, you're not eligible to run for office. So who is eligible as an immigrant? And who do you cover when you refer to immigrants running for office?
Well, so my book includes stories of first and second generation Americans, but also some who are third and fourth generation. I really chose stories that I think exemplify the incredible tenacity of a range of people who stepped up to serve their communities. And so there's a range of immigrant backgrounds, Latinos, Asian Americans, Arab Americans, third, fourth, first and second generation, people who were formerly undocumented. And the point of these stories is to illustrate not just the power of these individual stories, but also the possibility that is inherent in our democracy. And I talk about systems reform that needs to happen. You know, we just talked about a practice in which people, party leaders, look at folks like me and say we can only run in district with large numbers of voters of color. But in fact, in the book, I tell about people who ran and won in majority white districts, or districts that include multiracial populations that are not always a majority of people who share the ethnicity with the audience, with the candidate. We're talking about people who have shared experiences with American voters, the shared experience of being a first generation college student, the shared experience of struggling to make ends meet, the shared experience of wanting something for your child that you can't always give because of the systems that are holding your family back. And that's way more important than the shared ethnicity, which I think is one entry point for voters. But unless a candidate or an elected official is fighting for you on behalf of shared experiences with you, then I don't think that person is being truly representative.
Let's talk about some of the people that you cover. I mean, often when we think about, you know, wanting folks who to run for office, we think of Congress. But running for one's local city council is a really important stepping stone to using our democratic tools. And you start your book with a survey of and description of Raquel Castañeda Lopez in Detroit, Michigan, who's a city council member. Tell us her story.
Sure. Raquel is one of the people who, in fact, is a third generation Mexican American in Detroit. And she was able to run and win because Detroit went through a process of changing its elections from being citywide to including a number of districts so that the city was divided up into a number of districts. Raquel's district includes a large Latino and a large African American population and a small Arab American population. And so she, as someone who had grown up in that district, was able to benefit from her relationships with community residents, from enthusiasm by people in her community to see someone like her run for office. And she ran in 2013 and won, and she ran for re-election in 2017. And is still not only the first, but the only Latina on the Detroit City Council. And, you know, she is someone who grew up poor, who still lives in the house in which she grew up in, who is bringing to the City Council her experiences as someone who has struggled with poverty, who has gone through college, who is from the Latino community, but grew up in a multiracial environment. And she brings all of those experiences to her campaigning, but also to her governance. She's just a powerful example of the possibility that exists in our democracy when the systems are set up to work for more people.
How important is it for candidates of color, candidates with immigrant background, who want to appeal to their broad voter base, to not subsume who they are, to not undermine their own identity? Because even though we may stand for issues that impact everybody in our constituency, we can be proud of our identity, our ethnicity, our background at the same time, right? I mean, sometimes we're given the sense that it's one or the other.
Well, I think the fact is that voters want someone whom they can trust. And if you're someone who's going to deny an aspect of who you are, you know, whether you're an immigrant or not, then it makes you less trustworthy, I think. And so I think what we bring is not just the fullness of our experience, but the authenticity of bringing our immigrant narrative, our working class narrative, our narrative as women. When we bring all that in an authentic way, then we're connecting with voters based on that authenticity rather than on something we think they want from us, as opposed to who we really are.
You talk in your book also about Ilhan Omar, the incredible Somali candidate who won her primary race for Congress in Minnesota. Now she's a national figure, presumably wrote about her before most Americans knew who she was. How important is her story? And, you know, is she the kind of person that can really make it to higher office? I mean, Congress is federal representation.
Yeah, and you know, she will make history when she gets to Congress in January. But I think Ilhan's story, what's particularly important about her story is that she defeated a 44-year incumbent in Minnesota for state legislature in 2016. And so she had the experience of running a successful coalition campaign, you know, that unified voters who were either frustrated with the incumbent, even though they had voted for her in the past, or new voters who had not participated. And Ilhan built a strong and successful campaign back in 2016. It was a very competitive race. And so this year, when Keith Ellison made the decision not to run so that he could run for lieutenant governor in Minnesota, Ilhan already had experience as a legislator and experience running a campaign. And so she could benefit from that when she made that congressional run. And, you know, I think the fact is that ultimately, someone like Ilhan's primary responsibility is going to be to her constituents in her congressional district and to her state. But the fact is that you cannot deny that she's a powerful symbol to women of color everywhere, to immigrant women, to refugee women, to Somali Americans. Regardless of whether they live in her district, they see in her the possibility of what they too can be and the possibility of what we have in America that is available to us despite the anti-immigrant rhetoric and practice and policy that is surrounding us at this moment.
I love the story that you tell in your book, People Like Us, about Jose Moreno. He's here in Anaheim, Southern California, quite near where our program is based, where he managed to win a seat on the city council. After basically challenging the biggest corporate player in Anaheim, Disneyland. Tell us Jose's story.
Sure. Jose, came to the United States as a child, undocumented, and actually benefited from the largest immigration reform program that we've had in at least in my time in 1986, when Reagan signed into law a bill that I'm sorry, I think 1984 that we signed into law the Immigration Reform and Control Act. And I tell stories of two people, Jose and Isela Blanc, both of whom benefited from that law. And he went on to he ran in 2014 in Anaheim in a citywide race and lost. And in that same election, the voters of Anaheim voted in these single member districts. So when Jose ran in 2016 for the second time, he was running in a newly drawn District 3, where again he shares in common the experience of many of his community's residents. As a Latino, he and his wife have raised children there. And he ran in this race in which he effectively, it's a great David and Goliath story. And since he's been on the city council, he and his fellow council members have really been able to push Disney to engage in certain reforms that help the working people of Anaheim. And so, I mean, that story and many of the others I tell in my book really are these amazing stories of hope about what is possible for individuals. And part of what I'm saying is, if we could change the system to work better so that we have more single member districts or that we have more public financing, then many, many more Jose's and Raquel's could run and win office.
Right, because these folks who have managed to successfully win have done so in spite of the incredible obstacles placed in their way, as you said, through a rigged system, that unfortunately is keeping many other candidates out. Now, we have a situation where approaching the midterm elections, there are very strong efforts, very systemic and official efforts being made to prevent voters of color from simply being able to vote for their favorite candidates. So isn't this the flip side of the coin? On the one hand, you have a system that's rigged against immigrant candidates trying to run for office. On the other hand, you have a system rigged against people of color who want to vote for any and all candidates in office. The situation in Georgia is in particular dramatic, where Stacey Abrams is running against Brian Kemp, the current Secretary of State, who's the same person who's essentially controlling voter eligibility and is putting on hold the voting ability of tens of thousands of African Americans.
Yeah, I mean, there are these amazing, let's call them quirks in our system, that I think are not entirely coincidental. Like these systems have been set up to work for wealthy, well-connected white males, and you are now seeing this incredible uprising of potential candidates, increased voter turnout, and a whole system of civic engagement that's saying, no, we want to make democracy work better for everyone. And I think that is very frightening for the people who have held on to power for so long and have relied on the same base of voters. To watch thousands of new voters turn out at the polls is scary to people in power, because they know that now we're watching in a way that we weren't watching before. We were not as woke as we were before, certainly not as many people. And I think that the example that you give in Georgia is one, but there's places like Texas as well where this is happening. What I think you're going to see in the midterms, though, is that there will be an outpouring of voters, as there already has been in the states with early voting, because we are really more aware than ever before that our democracy is not working and that we need to show up if we want it to work for us.
So are there people that you can point to who have very successfully managed to frame the issue of immigration as an immigrant candidate, Because language is so critical. I want to go back to what we started talking about in our conversation, which is this issue of immigration as having become this horrible political football with the lives of millions of people hanging in the balance. And it's just far too easy to demonize immigrants. You know, if you have the murder of an American connected to one undocumented immigrant, that is blown up in the media to the at the expense of, you know, the many immigrants that have been killed by Americans even. That's never treated as a big story. And so is there something you can point to in terms of someone who's very effectively showing that immigration can be a winning issue?
Well, so I think that, there are a number of points there, and one I want to emphasize is that often when people look at immigrants, they see us in a one-dimensional way, right? And that I must represent everyone who is from my community. And I think this is why you have this kind of demonizing of all immigrants if an undocumented immigrant or a documented immigrant is involved in a crime. And we do not do that when we see white Americans, for example. We don't sort of lump everybody into one category. And so I think there is that problem of like creating a unidimensional picture of immigrants. I do think that when people think about immigrants and their fellow immigrants and immigrants in their community, that Americans in general are not necessarily anti-immigrant towards people that they may know. I don't think that's a broad brush. I mean, obviously there's a lot of racism and hate crimes, but I think in general, immigrant as neighbor versus immigration as a policy issue are seen very differently. I think we've seen some congressional members navigate that issue very well in terms of owning their heritage and fighting on behalf of immigration, pro-immigrant policy. We've seen that in Senator, in Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, both when she was in the Washington legislature and now that she's in Congress. We've, of course, seen it with Luis Gutierrez, both of whom are mentioned in the New York Times article that you referred to earlier. But in recent months, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, who are all on their way to Congress, have been very vocal about the issue of immigration, and they have been elected in their primaries and are likely to go on to Congress given the composition of those districts. So I think it's possible for you to call it as it is and for you to own the fact that our nation includes a lot of immigrants and the immigrant narrative is very much a part of the American story. It's possible to do that and win. One last point I'll make is, look, I think it is definitely a political football and will continue to be that in Congress. I think that as much as we're going to see wonderful historic wins, I don't know that the issue of immigration reform is going to move very far in the next couple of years. But I think it matters even ultimately, we want good, solid immigration reform that's going to bring a pathway to citizenship. However, in the absence of that, we do want our leaders. We want to know that our leaders are fighting on our behalf and that are going to stand up for us. And so, at minimum, we need people not to just pay lip service during the time of elections, but we need people to really show up and fight for us when they get to Congress and when they're in our state legislatures and our city councils to create sanctuary cities, to protect kids in schools from being bullied and harassed because of their immigration status or any other marker of identity. We need to know that we can feel safe to send our kids to schools and show up in hospitals for emergency care. Those basic protections, I think, are possible even as we navigate a very, very toxic national environment around immigration reform.
Well, finally, Sayu, for those people who are listening to this interview, watching it and thinking, I want to be part of this incredible sort of revolution of candidates of immigrant background running for office and winning office. What can I do? Where do I start? It's a very daunting thing. As you said, the system is rigged, but it's also rigged financially. That's always a big challenge. How do you raise the money? There's so many issues that can deter people. Tell us about your organization, New American Leaders, and how folks might be able to hook into it to get involved if they want to be part of this democratic uprising.
Sure. So thank you for that. We are at newamericanleaders.org. And, our training targets first and second generation Americans, but we're open. If you feel like you are third, fourth generation, you strongly identify with the immigrant experience, we don't turn people away based on their background. And if you want to just support these folks, you can make a tax-deductible contribution to our organization. You can sign up for our mailing list. We do a Friday email called the Resistance Roundup, where people can learn about ways that they can take action, where they can learn about problematic things that are happening, which are not always talked about in the news. We lift up the voices of people we've trained who are making good policy. So newamericanleaders.org to sign up for a training or sign up for our mailing list or make a contribution. And if you're thinking about running for office, I always tell people that they need to start showing up in their communities, show up to your school board meetings and your city council meetings, and start doing things in your community before you decide that you're going to run, so that people can see that you're really committed to the community that you live in.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Sayu. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Sayu Bhojwani has been my guest. She's a founder and president of New American Leaders, the only national organization focused on preparing immigrant leaders to run for public office. She served as New York City's first commissioner of immigrant affairs. We've been discussing her new book, People Like Us, The New Wave of Candidates Knocking at Democracy's Door. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.